I don't think I could coach any other country. I because I don't know, I don't think I'd ever be able to speak with as much passion and desire in another change room. Because it wouldn't matter that much. Probably do it, and I mean, there's the professional side to it where you obviously
it's a job,
and you
the job, and
you do your best and whatever. But shit, man, I'd struggle to do anything else.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brooke.
Shooks, let's get this episode going.
Brookie, it's been forever. I know, I mean, you asked me what, 2-3 months ago, but yeah, the
this was actually a joke when we sat at the Test Championship and I said to you, Coach, now must I speak to your agent now that you're a Test Championship winner? Must I speak to your agent to book you? And you said, Brookie, for the biggest man in cricket, anytime. Here we are today, just a couple of months later, and you're on the show. Welcome.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I've now officially been demoted to the second biggest man in cricket. But yeah, happy to be here.
Thanks, mate.
And thanks for the coffee. Yes, it's good spot this.
Yo, listen, you need that coffee, eh? It's been a little bit of a travel back and forth for you, eh?
It has been the last couple of months. I mean, if we go back to Lords, WTC final, I mean, that's the beginning of June. I probably spent like 5-6 days at home. Wow. And that's probably why I'm still married also. because I get to spend that little time at home. No, but it's been great. I mean, the cricketing bit has been phenomenal now that I've taken over all the formats. World Test Championship was unbelievable. Mm. I mean, that's probably, and I think Ashwell has said it to everyone who cares to listen, that it's probably been his biggest and his best day in his cricketing life. And I can say that quite unequivocally for me, it's been the same. Mm. But just the last month and a bit touring Australia, England with a white ball sides has been great. It's tough. But it's great, and this is what we want, you know. We're starting to build something nicely there. Guys are putting together nicely. And then for my sins, I spent a week in Vietnam as well.
Wow.
And I'm gonna give Vietnam a bit of a pun.
Please go for it, yeah. We might get the Vietnam Tourism Board to sponsor the biggest man.
I promise you, you'll be the biggest man in Vietnam as well. but what a place. Jeez, I spent a week there, my younger daughter's there. So I didn't come straight back after the UK.
Nice.
My wife and I met in Vietnam again.
Beautiful place.
Lovely place.
Yeah.
And you can actually walk there, you know, chest out with your ZARs in your pocket.
Yeah.
Which aren't worth much anywhere else in the world, but certainly in Vietnam it can buy you a few things.
Yeah. But and you've been there before?
Never been.
Hmm.
And it definitely won't be the last time I'm going there. Yeah.
You don't get to have many holidays these days, eh?
Yeah, but I still get to see some of the best places in the world, and for that I'm always going to be grateful. And I think cricket has been that to me my entire life. You know, it's I think in your young days you like, yeah, cricket is everything and it's your life. And as things evolve and family and kids come along, and then you start realizing, well, it's a very big part of your life. It's not your life, but it's been like really good to me, and I'm eternally grateful for what cricket has meant in my life, and certainly for my family, and yeah, get to see lots of good places.
Looking at you today, Shooks, I must say I've known you for a number of years, and I've seen you very stressed before, but I'm looking at a man that's very content with life. That you might not see it, but there's an aura around you that is very happy with the person that he's become, and the stature. It's almost like, yeah, I've arrived. It's taken me a while in terms of public domain, but I feel that you are probably the happiest that you've been in your not just in your cricketing life, but in your life in general. Is that fair to say?
I don't think you're far off or far wrong. My wife will say it's because of the new knees I've got. Bilateral knee replacements.
I might need a doctor recommendation on my dodgy knee.
I can give you one. Clive White's a champion there at Newlands.
Nice.
Kingsbury.
Yeah, I'll note it down, yeah.
But yeah, so my wife will say it's that because I'm in less pain and so which means that I'm not as grumpy as I usually am.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. I think there's, when you say content and it doesn't got much to do with having arrived as a national coach or anything like that. But I think the fact that the journey has been what it has been and very often you think certain things are never going to happen and you make peace with that. But I'm comfortable with how things have panned out and I'm really happy. Yes, you're right. Content, but certainly not complacent and certainly not resting on laurels. But and definitely not a case of having arrived in terms of, oh, wow, look at me, World Test Championship winner, all the rest of it. I think there's... I'm just grateful to be and honored to be in a position where I get to serve our country. And I know it sounds like really soppy and squirmish and soft and all fuzzy type of things. Doesn't sit well with me. But and I think what the last couple of months have taught me is exactly that. Coming back from the UK and you see the impact that winning that trophy is actually had on the people of South Africa. It's things we never talk about. We never talk about, doing it for the country and that. But once you see what you've actually achieved, and I think that brings me the contentment that I was able to be part of something really special. And hopefully I'll be part of a few more things that are going to be special. So, yeah, really happy at the minute.
I want to... we're almost like starting at the end here, but I want to talk about that World Test Championship because I saw you on the field at the end of play, and leading up to the Test match, there were obviously some big calls to make, the Pato Lungi call, where you're going to go with the extra seamer. So you've never been a coach to stand down from making those big calls, no matter what the media are saying, no matter what the Twitter warriors, the keyboard warriors are saying, like
the biggest man in cricket.
Whatever, I would never. Judge any of your decisions, but you've got really conviction. You've got conviction in your decisions. Having guys like Ashwell, Pitbuerter, those guys around you, is that your inner circle that you trust? And
Ash has been brilliant. Ultimately, the decision lie with me.
Yeah.
And you need a little bit of luck along the way as well. It's not all being this genius, everything this Oak says and touches turns to gold.
Yeah.
There are going to be days when you get it wrong as well and you've got to live with that. But yes, Ashwell, Pitt, the guys in the side, Timber, Aiden, KG, Kesh, the senior pros. And then obviously one or two guys outside of the inner circle that I trust, one or two of the domestic coaches, guys like Russell Domingo, and that we still tap into. So, whilst it lies with me and I make that decision, and there's still a reliance on other people as well. But yes, that was probably the toughest call I had to make. Dane Patterson, leaving him out at Newlands was tough. Because I knew what it meant to him playing here.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was like when you know this decision is going to get made, and I'm going back to Newlands against Pakistan now. After Pato had taken five at PE and then five at Centurion as well. And I mean, coming back from the wilderness, I mean, we had like five or six weeks down, and I'm like, fuck, we're now.
Yeah.
All right, Pato. Gone to New Zealand, and
yeah,
I'd seen something there that I thought we could use down the line, and that was tough. And it, like, as a coach, people never quite get to understand that part because there's still a humane side to it.
100%.
And you like sit and you know what it means to this Oak. His family's there. He's from Cape Town. he's probably never going to play another test match in Cape Town. And I'm saying to myself, this is the right cricketing decision. I have to take the emotion out of it. So that was really tough. And Pato was, he was gutted here in Cape Town. But, and I'll always say this, that if someone were to say to me, what would you describe your Proteus side as, your test side? I'd say, look at Dane Patterson and it'll tell you what it's about. Coming to Lords as well. He played at the Middlesex. But everything screamed, not better, would scream Dlungi to me. And there was a lot of doing and throwing, a lot of people, even the inner circle were like, yeah, Shuks, are you sure about this? And I'm like, listen, guys, this is the right decision. I'm convinced about this. And yeah, breaking that to Pato was, again, not easy.
Yeah.
But my God, the way that Oak rocks up at practices and how he invests in the side. And I mean, he's the heart and soul. I'm going to find him a gig in the side when he stops playing. Like an assistant's coach.
He'll do anything.
No.
Pato will be the groundsman. He loves the grounds.
He does, eh? Yeah. It's like I've seen this many occasions. At the end of the day's play, he grabs the hose there from 100%. The groundsman. Shoes off, watering the wicket.
Yeah.
But he's the heartbeat of that
he's
side.
He's an absolute beauty.
He's an absolute champion. And again, you just see him get on with his business.
Yeah.
Churning out overs for Western Province now.
Pato with the Red Bull is just, it's beautiful. And it's you amazing. Look at his stats, eh? You look at
his
stats.
It's amazing how things, you take Pato, for example, and this is how.
He's a white ball.
He started off as what was that league that was going to happen?
Zanzi.
That one. Yeah. It was a great idea, by the way. The Zanzi. I think he was like the Oak that went for the most money.
Yeah, he went for, I think, 1.2 at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, still a lot of money.
Still a lot of money.
Yeah, as a white ball player.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, things happen, and the next minute he's like a gun for hire in the Red Bull space, which you don't often find.
100%. I mean, county game, he's just made for that county game and just cleaned up there.
Yeah,
an absolute legend.
And it's a pity that I see Knotts won the county.
So that your test wicket keeper, it's going to be.
No, I don't know how we're going to keep this so quiet. It's like tough enough keeping him quiet. Now it's another thing to Google who's hit the winning run to win Knotts the county championship in 2025.
He's going
to
be unplayable.
He's unplayable at the best of time. Yeah. But yeah, great. I mean, happy for Scholesy as well. And I think. Ben is not so good because they.
I see they got relegated to Durham.
At one point.
Wow. Okay. Keepers.
I'd rather have that because I think the other side that was in trouble there was Hampshire, and I'd far rather see A.D. Burrell.
Yeah, shame. He's leaving. Leaving Hampshire now.
Hampshire, yeah. What a champion as well.
Absolute champion.
Just we all over the show here. Is there not
this is what the biggest man in cricket is about. Okay. We've already a half an hour in probably, and
I was shitting myself driving here. I was like, what's Brookie going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about transformation. I'm going to talk about all the fun stuff.
I told you I've got another appointment.
Yeah, listen, Shooks. I mean, finishing up on the Test Championship, one thing that really stuck for me was at the end of it, and you were walking around the field, and half of Bibby's Kitchen was there, and half of the guys from Lansdowne were there, and it felt like this is my mate. That there was such an emotional connection to that win, that this was my mate who just happens to be the national coach that on a Wednesday. At 12, he's basically doing a shift behind the counter at Bibby's Kitchen. But on Thursday, he's at the Test Championship final. The personalization, I think, is what you've achieved. And did you feel that love?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I couldn't put it any better than that. I think it was like that personalization for everyone. It was a bunch of mates on the field representing a country who still sees who they were mates of as well, you know. I mean, as we were walking around, I saw Aiden Breakaway there, and next minute with a mate of his from school knocking back one.
Yeah.
I think that was the first of many.
Yeah.
For Sawson that day. But yeah, that personalization was special, and it is special. And that's all I think that's all we ever wanted to be.
Yeah.
And it's certainly for me, coming out of Lansdowne, where, I mean, lots of really good cricketers, sportsmen, come out of. I mean, Pity. Yeah. It's not from, he's from Lansdowne area, down the road, Faik Davids. Lots of top sportsmen that had come out of Lansdowne. And you're right. I mean, I still get little, I mean, good goose flesh moments when you, when you'd see every face that you actually saw there. You'd mention Bibi's. I mean, she was there, the boss lady.
Wow.
She was at Lord's for the 4 days. She says, there's no ways I'm not going to come.
Unreal.
Right? And just mates, people that you never thought you'd see there. And for people to, like, take their hard-earned cash, take the effort to come out there at, what, 25 rand to a frickin' pound, spend that hard-earned cash. I don't think that, I think that was the only gift we could give them, really. And like a big thank you. So, but that personalization, yeah, Brookie, that was special. I mean, the faces, people I saw that I coached when I was in Joburg for the B side, when I was starting out my coaching journey. Warren Dugmore, Matty Harris, David de Brugge.
I saw David de Brugge there.
All those folks there, and you know, the messages you get, and walking through London in the evening.
It was a proper vibe.
It was a vibe. I'd never experienced anything like that. I mean, I was the only one that could walk in a straight line. So the rest.
They did really well. I mean, there were so many media duties afterwards. I mean, Temba was literally like showering with the ICC mace. It was always on him. Like, it was mad. But you could see the boys were enjoying it. And that's what it's about, right?
And what, like, was great as well was that, and again, also things that we never spoke about. Once it was achieved, to have someone like Biff there and Polly, and they were obviously on commentary duties, but you're two legends of South African cricket. Two captains who endured a lot of pain, and this might not have been the solace or the closure that they got it, but it was like almost written in the scripts that they had to be there as well. Buffy in the change room there, just like chilling and experiencing that, and just the sincerity you get from those oaks, like, shit, we're like so happy for everyone. And it was a South African thing, man. It wasn't Shuks's or Temba's Proteus side, it was South Africa.
We actually spoke to a couple of guests about it. We spoke to Dale about it. Obviously, he's closer to it in terms of... but we also spoke to Adrian Caper. And we asked him about the fact that, did he feel that when he was watching the Test Championship, that there was some sort of relief, intergenerational relief that was passed down. He said that it felt so good, even from his generation. 92 World Cup disappointment. Like, so there was this like... ripple effect through all the generations, through Adrian's generation, through Alan Donald's, the, you know, those kind of guys. And did you guys feel that when you
yes,
when you won?
I certainly, I mean, I allowed myself a moment, and I still get a little bit emotional about it. We needed two runs to get. And then it was like, only then did I think, right, I think we're going to do this. Because I was cucking myself.
Only with two runs to win.
you play all
you
this.
You told Bennett and Scalzi that you didn't have confidence in them getting the two runs.
Scalzi had no confidence in it. Bennett was cool. Yeah. Scalzi, you could see him. He was like, like a gibbering idiot.
Scalzi was reverse lapping. And
I was actually sitting there and I was going, I can ramp him, Scalzi. Ramp him, Scalzi. Right? And he pulls out the ramp gloves. But... now, like, I mean, you just like shit yourself because you play all these scenarios of how things potentially can go wrong. And that's just, I think that's just protecting oneself if something were to go wrong. But two runs together, and that's when I like allowed myself. First thoughts, my dad, who passed away in April or March, whatever it was, this year. And then also guys that have come before, you know, it was my dad and the next person I thought of, because I then made it a personal thing. I then looked at my journey, not the playing journey, but the coaching journey. And people like the late Hilton Ackerman, who was like a mentor to me when I'd started out, those sort of images started flashing, you know, and I was like, almost like a little prayer and saying, well, thanks to these, to everybody that's played a part in my journey.
Mm.
And I would have just wished that they were there to see that.
Mm.
Because I know how proud they would be.
Mm.
And I'm sure, and I'd like to think that all of South Africa felt that way. And now that you mentioned guys like Capes and all of them, I mean, I saw Dale's a little bit as well.
Mm.
And, I mean, we couldn't do it for anybody else, but it had to be South Africa.
Yeah. And hopefully in next year, there's another World Cup to look
at. Yeah, yeah, hopefully this is the beginning, eh? Mm. And I know people talk of monkey off the back and catch, and still a lot of hard graft.
Yeah.
The one thing we're not going to be is complacent.
Mm.
We're not going to allow ourselves to get all arrogant and windcut, that sort of thing.
That's not the identity of this team. There's no egos, there's no arrogance, and I can't see that happening. Like, in terms of, there might be one or two players that get a little bit of a hit themselves, but that's normal.
That's normal, yeah. And especially, I mean, when we've got a lot of young guys as well. But yeah, you're right. I can't see that happening either, but we just, what's it, forewarned is forearmed type of thing. So, just make sure that everybody's feet's on the ground. The next couple of years are going to be massive for us.
Mm.
Obviously, new cycle starts soon with the Test cricket. But yeah, there's a T20 World Cup in Feb and then 2027. I mean, that's on everybody's lips.
Yeah.
Biggest World Cup.
That's going to be unbelievable. To have a home coach, that's going to be just...
Hopefully the finals in Newlands and we could lift it.
That would be unbelievable. Wow, then, Shooks, we can both just drop our mic and say...
It's all right, listen, you're all good.
We're good, thanks. Yeah. Shooks, something that... And it speaks to this kind of, any player that comes into a side, there's a culture already there. I'm of the... And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because... You're obviously got a lot more experience than me in the coaching front. But I always believe in organic culture rather than forced culture. I don't believe in sitting in a boardroom or in a safari or whatever and say, right, guys, what is our culture? How do you go about that as Shukri Conrad?
Yeah, so you speak to many people and there's been this big drive over the years around culture, and I was also one, and I'm also in that corner where culture happens organically, but it's all about the leadership and who's that leadership. How do you drive that sort of culture, And then you have people that say, well, hold it, it can be formulated, you can stick things down and you can drive it in a certain way. But for me, obviously, where I sit, I've always prided myself on, I've got to know my subject matter, which is cricket, but I don't know everything, so I need people around me that know more than I do.
Hmm.
Ashwell Prince knows a lot more about batting with Test cricket and international cricket than I ever will, though, Pete Buerta and anybody else. But you've also got to know people.
Mm.
And that for me was the biggest thing. If I can get that person that walks through the door to be comfortable when he walks through the door, to know that all that matters is his performance and nothing else. And for me there to create an environment where he can perform at his best. And, there's certain things where I mean, and you go back years ago, and there was like, the other day on the bus, and there's Tony DeZorzi, deadlocks, cap on, and I'm like, hey, there's this Irie Oaks are calling your name, Tony. But people are now identifying. Previously, that wasn't the look and fit for an international cricketer.
Yeah.
Right? You need to have like short back and sides, and your cap had to sit down.
Mm.
And I think this is how things have evolved, is that the way you looked was often associated, and the way you behaved was associated with your obsession with the badge, let's call it that.
Mm.
People are obsessed with the badge all over, but it looks different. Your kid that comes out of Uffies, and this is not knocking any school institution, that comes out of Pretoria, that comes out of Cares or anything, that comes out of Saks or Rondebosch, that obsession looks different to the kid that comes out of Groenvlei in Lansdowne or in Khayelitsha. It looks different because they're different people.
Mm.
But they're still pretty much obsessed with the badge. They still want to represent South Africa.
Yeah.
It just looks different. Mm. And I think that's what we've managed to get right.
And they've got reference points now.
Correct.
As well. I mean, Tony D'Souza is a reference point for that young kid that grows up, he's got dreadlocks, he doesn't look the part of a, you know, like Themba Bavuma is a massive reference point in this country.
Themba, KG, all of these guys, but Themba especially, I mean, and I think that was, the Langa.
Yeah, trophy to.
Langa trophy tour that the guys did well while we were slaving away in Zimbabwe. There's a line of sight for the kid now.
Yeah.
He can identify. Very often, I mean, we used to have the posters of all our heroes up. Mm. I mean, I was a Murama Adrian Kuiper fan because he was ahead of his time. He used to hit the ball out of Newlands and that used to turn me on.
Yeah.
Right? but now there's a proper line of sight for that kid from Langa, from Lansdowne. It's like, you see, Uncle Shooks is, he's a world champion here now. I mean, Ake Masusuma be that though. Right? Similarly, there's a place in the sun for everyone.
Yeah.
And again, I'm digressing.
No, Francis. I'll bring you back when.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, don't worry.
Please do. we were talking about culture. Mm. And I think that is, there are still norms and values and a set of ethics that we operate with.
Yeah.
There's still a high performance environment.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's okay to be you. You be you. These are the parameters. You know what they are. If you step out of line, you're still going to earn the wrath of
a fine or
whatever it is. But it's okay to be you.
Mm.
And we've for so long, we've like yearned for different guys that do things differently.
Yeah.
And we've got those oaks.
Yeah.
We've got across all divides. It's not only reserved for the brothers.
Yeah.
There are a few white dogs that walk in there that are like different.
Yeah.
And I encourage that.
Yeah.
And it's like refreshing. It keeps us on our toes.
Mm.
I mean, I feel a lot younger than I am because these dogs keep you on your toes and they keep you entertained.
Yeah.
You have a lach and they work hard and then they have a lekker party and they're driven, which is exciting.
And they chirp you, like gone are the days where you fear your coach and that kind of thing.
And that's the thing, you know.
You allow them to chirp you.
There was always this thing about, you know, you have to create this divide. They must know you're the coach.
Yeah.
They know you're the coach.
Yeah.
I think what has helped me is that at some stage in their careers, I'd worked with them.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of them, bar one or two guys.
Yeah.
So whether it was at under 19 level, like with Brevi and some of those oaks, at National Academy level, pretty much all those oaks had come through there.
Yeah.
So we knew each other. We know what we're about.
Mm.
KG knows. Aiden knows me. I know them. I know which buttons to press where. Yeah. They know the boundaries. And I hate saying this, but it feels like I'm a bit of a father figure there.
Mm.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
And my light
on the outside, it definitely
it's my light is I saw them when they were kids and they've like returned as men.
Yeah, they got up to all the cuck back then, you know.
Still get up to all the cuck. It's like enough cuck to be gotten up to. But I think that bond is there. That is a special bond. It is one of trust, of care.
Mm.
It's not, it's a coach player, but it's not, it's more than that.
Mm.
It is one of care and trust.
Mm.
And when I sit with you and I say, I'm leaving you out, it hurts, it's disappointing, all of those things. But they trust that I'm doing the right thing. And I can look them in the eye and we live by it. The truth only hurts once. And, we don't bullshit each other.
Pity was actually telling the story of when you sent him a text and he says, can you chat? And he knew in New Zealand that you weren't going to play him in that first test match.
Yeah.
But so he walked in and he says, am I playing because I'm not, I don't have a 50 average or from a batting point of view or what? And don't bullshit me.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there and it's like, Shooks, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's all right. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but Pity, you need to hear me out. Like, no, it's fine. I trust you. I believe you.
Yeah.
Because I've given it. And yeah, so But yeah, it doesn't equal a soft environment, and I think that is the big thing that that we've got to continually make sure it's still a high performance environment.
Yeah,
it's still an elite sports side with elite sportsmen in it, and we're gonna get judged on our results, not on how lekker we can be with each other. You get judged on your results.
That man management, actually, I mean, you were a teacher, actually, while you were a post-career, and you just take us through that. You were part teacher, part coach, and eventually you had to make the call.
Yeah, so I back in the day, and this is a long time ago, when I matriculated, and you're like, you know, what am I going to do? I want to play cricket, man, and I want to be involved in cricket, but it wasn't. And then my late parents were like, no, you must go work for the government. It gives you security. And you get a housing subsidy. So there I was, you were training college teacher because it was security.
Yeah.
And a housing subsidy, which I never saw. Anyway, so I qualified as a teacher. That's where I met my still wife. When I say still, not quiet, because that's...
She hasn't got rid of you yet.
Yeah, she's still my wife.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Wadra. I became a teacher, taught for 9 years, and I taught in Mitchell's Plain at the primary school there. And I then I went to England for 1 year, took off 6 months, 4 months, whatever it was. Went to Holland, played and coached, and started cutting my teeth in the coaching. And then the headmaster called me in the one day, and he loved his sport. He was like cricket pedoyant. Yeah. And he used to call me Klong, which is like young boy in Afrikaans.
Yeah.
He said, Klong, you must decide now. Are you a teacher or are you now? And Mr. Hendricks, the late Mr. I said, Uncle Bill, no, I'm not a teacher anymore. And then gave up the teaching bit because it was not fair. It was wrong with the kids. Here's me living the dream, you know, teaching, getting the security, no housing subsidy, but the security. And being able to go to the UK in the winter months, play and coach. And eventually it was a decision had to be made, and it was always going to be cricket. And Wadra, and I'll talk often of Wadra, I don't talk about her enough. She held the fort for a long time, you know. I was still doing the bit, but not earning a consistent salary, but it was, listen, let's embark on that now. This is what you want to do. The playing career you probably missed out on given circumstances, but let's embark on this journey, and we'll be okay. I'll hold the fort, and I'll be forever grateful for that as well.
The fatherly figure, when I was doing my prep for this episode,
prep for them.
I actually did that this morning between the hours of 6 and 7.
Feels like you're just making up as we go along.
Oh, thanks for it. Good that my work comes to the fore. And actually, the more I thought about it, was there seemed to be a weird alignment between Jake White in the rugby space, actually, and Shukri Conrad, in that similar background, like that teacher background, came through under 19 academy, you know. Just under you know, SAA high performance, and eventually became the national coach, and had this flow of having those youngsters from under 19 level all the way to the national team, won the World Cup in 2007 with that team. So like, was that always part of the plan? Like, and it seems like Cricket South Africa have done really well in terms of the production line, in terms of the succession plan from a coaching point of view, and it seems that this team, as it is right now, is you are the perfect coach for this team and this generation right now.
I think, coming back, funny, somebody else said that to me the other day. We were in PE, the biggest man in PE, Bilby at Grey High School. he said, you know, like the parallels, he drew the same parallel, Jake White. Teacher, I think he was at Chepi, I think it was, whoever. South Africa under 20, all those guys, and then coach South Africa. And exactly like you say there. So, that obviously must be the case. I think it was a natural progression, given my love for cricket, and I was and I'm still a cricket nut, man.
Mm.
Right. The only other thing I watch now is the Ryder Cup, obviously. You see, Liverpool, watching them yesterday was yeah, tiresome. But
try to be a Man United fan.
I don't think they're any left. Yeah, they nearly stung Brentford, they nearly drew. But yeah, I think it was a natural progression for me, the teaching.
Mm. That man management, I feel like that base of man.
Yeah. I love teaching, but I hated what went with teaching.
Yeah.
The prepping and the schedules and your classroom. All I wanted to do was interact with the kids and make them try and be better. And like, I love the interaction. And I think that just spilled over into my cricket space and into my coaching. So it was a natural progression for me. It definitely stood me in great stead, the man management type of thing. It's all of those stuff that you mentioned have stood me in really good stead, man. Right? The care, but at the heart of it, it's a care factor. You gotta care, and sometimes I don't necessarily show that. Some will say like tough love, but yeah, there's a soft side here as well. You know, you have to care for the player. You've got to be honest enough with that player, and I think that is also something that we've really based our culture on, is one of honesty with each other.
You've obviously built up that reputation and that respect for many, many years in the dirt in domestic cricket. You've coached in Gauteng, you've coached at the Cobras. Just take us through kind of like, and I say that because you haven't played for the Proteas, obviously, so you haven't just played for the Proteas, big name, get a big job kind of thing. You've old school. Mm. You've gone through the ranks, you've coached every single level, including the bloody Ugandan national cricket team. Like, how important were those steps up to where you are today?
Yeah, no, I mean, I did what 20 odd years of coaching domestically, and I think I missed the important bit of what you mentioned in the previous question around I'm the right coach for this side.
Yeah,
but it ties into what I'm going to say now. In that, along the way, you felt, well, you should have been coaching South Africa before, you know, like every time the job becomes available, I apply and crack a interview, but either I can't bloody interview. But you walk away with disillusioned and you're like, frick, man, when is it going to happen for me, you know? Is it ever going to happen?
Mm.
But thankfully, I was always one of a believer in things will happen if it's meant to be, and everything has its time. God is the greatest of planners. There's certain things that are beyond you, right? And when it doesn't make it easier, you're like still like that oak and this oak and in the eye and from, and you feel it's never gonna happen. But you soldier on, and you go through all of the emotions that coaches go through. You get fired at Western Province after winning the trophy, the four-day trophy. Didn't see that coming. Looking back, maybe it was a good thing, right? Humbles you, right? And then, and like you, the previous thing, maybe I was never meant, maybe I would never have been good for the guys that played then. And maybe what the current crop need is someone like me. And coaching, a bit like a lot of what we do, you can be many things to different people. A lot of people think I'm the cuckest coach in the world. And some folks will think I'm one of the best coaches in the world. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't set out to try and like convince the oak that thinks I'm cuck that I'm good. No, whatever you're gonna feel it, brother. We're gonna get on with what we do here. So, and you're right, I didn't have the profile. Here's like another quota appointment. Nah, man. Who's this brother? The good thing is, if I go back to my first gig, which was Gauteng, I got a call from the then CEO, forget his name, Ziggy Wadvala. Are you interested in coaching? I believe you're doing some good work in Cape Town there, under 19s, whatever I was coaching here. Yes, I'd be interested. Come up. And there was a drive at the time. Obviously, they needed to create opportunities for... I called them COX, which was Coaches of Color, by the way.
That's a hell of an acronym.
But with obviously without the K.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, when you walk in a space at the time when there's this drive for opportunities to be created for black or non-white coaches and players.
Mm.
So you walk in at the Wanderers, coach of the B-side,
mm.
and you can feel all these eyes on you, then like, who's this brother?
Mm.
I don't know, colored brother here from Cape Town. No one knows him.
Yeah.
But because I played in the SA school side with Daryl and Eckers at the time,
mm.
so when I walk in at the practice and the two people that come to me and greet and we hug and we chat is Eckers and Daryl,
mm.
it almost settles the whole place. Like, oh, okay, so there's a must know.
Yeah.
And that's the, those are the perceptions.
Yeah.
Right? And all we've ever wanted, any coach for that matter, irrespective, any player for that matter,
mm.
is just to afford an opportunity. Just create an opportunity. It is then up to me to show that you've created the right opportunity for the right person.
Mm.
And you need people along the way. I was very under no illusions. I didn't expect to walk into any position because I knew I wasn't profound enough.
Mm.
I didn't have the international career.
Mm.
Lots of people are still like, who's this, bro? Where, what? You know, and I'm cool with that. I've made peace with a lot of things.
Mm.
And the one thing that I've always prided myself on, again, coming back to what you said, all those years, is whether you're a player or you're a coach, you've got to serve your apprenticeship.
Mm.
And all of what I did was serving that apprenticeship, dealing with the day-to-day runnings of team dynamics, creating a team dynamic at the time when the transformation thing was just starting.
Mm. It
became like contentious issues,
mm.
right? Being there for players, both black and white, assuring everybody that it's going to be okay.
Mm.
It was just the birth of the Cricketers Association. SACA was just,
mm.
and there was like tensions there as mm. well between player and administration and all of that. So, yeah, I've pretty much seen it all in South African cricket. And only now, and even when I got given the job, you're still like, yeah, I've had all these years, but am I ready for this?
Mm. Still feel a little bit of imposter syndrome, but
yeah, you, am I ready? You know, am I, fuck it. I know you've wanted this all your life, but fuck it, maybe, are you biting on more than you can chew here type of thing? Mm. Certainly not.
You're in the best shape of your life, Shooks. I must say, you're looking unbelievable, but it might just be the Vietnamese sun. But,
or the black top. but yeah, I don't think anything ever prepares you for it.
Yeah.
But now that I've been in the job for a bit, serving your apprenticeship, being involved, being that fatherly figure,
mm.
knowing all the players knowing me,
mm.
has certainly made the transition a lot easier.
You talk of being that fatherly figure, and you talk about those reference points and your coaching career, but you also had a major reference point growing up, and that was your late dad.
Hmm.
And playing in that, playing in the segregated form of cricket in Western Province, how was that? How did that upbringing? I feel that there's a connection between that upbringing and seeing how your dad played and you playing in that era as well, and being able to play as the person you are, as the Themba Bavuma, as the Tony D'Souza, as the David Bellingham, like, it was just about the cricket. It wasn't about black, white, colored, et cetera. Growing up, how was that for you as a youngster?
So my story is, I don't even know if you know, mine is like a chicken story.
Mm.
And Shane, my late old man, and
he was a hell of a cricketer.
He was a hell of a cricketer.
I spoke to Vinnie Barnes about
it. He was a hell of a cricketer. I always used to rub him, and I'm like, how good could you out really have been?
Yeah.
Played on mats. And
yeah.
You know, didn't have helmets. He's like, yeah, that's why we could fucking hook. We didn't duck. So Dickie, my late dad, he played and captained Western Province, the non-racial side. Then he went to Newlands and watched a game. Forget who played there.
Mm.
They weren't allowed to go there. Then he got banned, right, for going to Newlands. Took it to court, won the case. Then he became the first non-white guy to play at Newlands. He moved to Greenpoint because Gerald Melnick was his lawyers or attorneys and represented him. And when he won the case, they said, well, come to Greenpoint. So he was like the first colored dog to play in a white setup. And it was the late Mr. Eisenhower who was the president of Western Province at SACOS at the time. So Dickie then moves to white Greenpoint, right? First colored oak, Howie Bergens follows, Omar Henry follows, Ricky Moody follows, all of those guys follow, right? They're the sellouts now because they're playing with the whiteies. They don't even know I'm playing cricket because I go with my mate across the road on a Saturday because he plays cricket. So my mate plays for Peninsula. I then crack a game or two for Peninsula. Whose team is Peninsula? Mr. Howard's team. Right? The guy that banned my dad. So they rock up at the cricket and it's a case of, yeah, how can Dickie's light be playing here? Dickie's playing in the whites. Let's call it not Bongi and Benambi Witkant, but Dickie's playing on the white side, I'm playing here. Not gonna bore you with a story. But anyway, so eventually, Russell Adams' dad, the late Cliffy Adams, forms a composite side of predominantly colored boys. And we play in against the Bishopses and the Rondebosch and the Weinbergs and all of that. So I also become the sellout because it was no normal sport in an abnormal society at the time. It was only about cricket for me. Would I do it differently now? Yes, I would do it differently now because I understand. And this is where I applaud guys like Vinny and a lot of the top players that didn't cross the divide, so to speak, that wasn't lured by cash and whatever it was, opportunities. They stood by their prince. My daughter, who's a bloody activist, she always said to me, you're a bloody sellout, man. But anyway, so growing up, And I'll never forget, I saw my dad, and I was a picky, he played for Greenpoint. Graham Gooch came over as a youngster. And they opened the batting minus helmets against Garth LaRue, who had just come back from the Kerry Packer series. Neil Lotter was probably one of the quickest around. They played against Cape Town. Gary Bricknell, late Gary Bricknell, left-arm spinner. And Dickie and yes, 30-odd-year-old Dickie would just come back from working night shift at Mobile into the game. Him and Gucci took these guys apart. And then, yeah, as I'm growing up, I then end up playing at Avondale. Bob Woolmer was at Avondale, and me as a 14-year-old, 15-year-old playing in the first side. And when I then go to Teachers Training College and the uprisings happening in the Western Cape, the shit hits the fan there because I'm playing on the white side. And the political turmoil was such that decisions then had to be made, you know. And that's when I went back to the non-racial side. We had to go and see Mr. Awa again and, like, Sailors against Shukri, would like to come back. So that's the one, but I mean, I played 3 years of Nuffield cricket, played SA Schools cricket, and like I mentioned earlier, myself, Gary, Eckers, Daryl, Alan, Donald, all of those. So we all played in the SA School sides together. And it was always only about the cricket for me, and I never did see the wood from the trees, meaning I didn't see what was going on in South Africa. And I would definitely have done things differently. But it did give me a great lens in that. So I played on the non-white side.
Mm.
I played on the white side. And then when unification came, I was there for that as well.
Yeah.
So I pretty much knew all of everything, all of the goings on and how things worked. And again, it gave me really good insights and I could navigate my way. A bit like the coaching. I've been around for so long, having seen so much. So I've really digressed here.
I wanted to pay respect to that era, because I think it's important that upbringing, and I really wanted to get across how many eras you've been a part of, and how that shaped your coaching philosophy to now, where you've got a team of individuals that every race, color, personality, and I feel that upbringing back in the day, playing non-racial cricket, playing all of those kind of cricket, like, allowed you to understand who that individual was when he comes in, and he's a devout Brevis, he's a white, very religious Christian kid, and then you've got somebody else who's completely different, who's a Hindu, a Keshav Maharaj, you know, that kind of thing, and somehow they become a well-blended, you can be who you are in this team, but this is what we're about as a unit.
Yeah, and I mean, there used to be like a cricket week that was held in Langa every year. It was called the Passmore Week. John Passmore, who was like the godfather in township cricket then. Mm. So I used to play in that week as well. Stay in Langa, behind the church there, in the hostels. We used to have this cricket week every year. And funny, when Temba and I started chatting and I met his mom in the UK for the first time at the function we had there.
Mm.
And she was like chatting and she said, you know, you played with my brother and his friends back in Langa many years ago. And it's like Junior Sokanyele and Solomon Fassi, the Malamba brothers. So all of those oaks that I played with then as well. Mm. So it like really just gave me it positioned me really well for the now South Africa.
Yeah.
Because I knew exactly what it was all about. Mm. And when I talk of that obsession of the badge and how different it looks for different people, and how we never quite embraced our diversity. I think we're starting to do it now. Mm. And people often say, yeah, no, our strength is diversity and this and that. But I think we only now are we starting to embrace it, because different guys are bringing different things, and you know, you get the Afrikaans okay, like you say, Brevi, who's like deeply rooted in religion. You get the English blight, you get the coloured bra that's so laid back, he's almost horizontal. You get the different things, and you know what? It's okay.
Mm.
Come, but this is how we graft here. And again, ultimately, we get judged on whether we win or lose.
Yeah.
Right? Not on how lekker we can be together.
That, the Springbok connection, the recent interaction with Rassie, I have to touch on it a little bit, because it wasn't just about you, actually. And it's something that you've always been a fan of, is that you've involved the whole management team in that as well. It wasn't just about the head coach and the head coach having a coffee at Bootlegger and talking, how do I win a flipping World Cup? It was your whole team, down to the physio, etc. And just give us a little bit of, I know you can't tell us everything what went on there, but
I'll tell you, there's nothing to hide. Really, there's nothing to hide. So the first time, so our team doctor worked with Rassie as one of his staff as well.
Okay.
And Doc, after the Centurion, that test, KNG and Plunk winning it for us, and yes, if I thought that was the test match.
Yeah.
And Doc like sent me a message that Rassie had sent. He was obviously watching all of the cricket and he was enjoying the cricket and he enjoyed the victory, and it was like fuck it, yeah, great, and yeah, da, da, da. And like say for Coach Shooks, fucking great, and.
And you met him before?
Never.
Okay.
And I said to Doc, I said, listen here, just reach out to him. So Doc said, yeah, I'll send you his number. And then I said to him, listen here, Russ, we're down in Cape Town, love to catch up, come down to the cricket. Just like to have you around, you know, just, we love our rugby, the Oaks.
Yeah.
And it'll be great for the guys to, and he was like, yeah, okay, nah, I doesn't really want to come to the cricket, you'll meet me at the hotel. So one evening, and this is, and I'm a bit like that as well, you know, I said, okay, let's, after the day's play, let's make it at like 8:30. So I walk in there at 8:20 and the Oaks sitting already, and I'm like, yeah, this is me.
Mm.
8:30, I'm here at 8:50, and you're like, I hate being late. Anyway, so I said, Russ, fuck it. I'm picking up. Russ, no, take your time. We then go upstairs and chill there in the Western. And just like we're chilling here, and you'd swear we'd known each other for years. And we just chatted everything. Sport, rugby, being South African, being national coaches, creating our own reality, which was big, a big thing that he's on. And just, yeah, just values and how, the type of players and everything. And there were so many similarities.
Yeah.
Fast forward, and he's like, listen here, whenever we play a test match, I want you to come and bring whoever you want. Come and spend a week with us in lead up to the test, be at our practices. But we never could. It was always, we were busy, they were busy. And then he reached out and he said, listen, we've got this alignment camp in Cape Town. Bring whoever you want. All right. And I thought, well, great. Bring the whole medical staff, whoever else there is. Just to, because they must be doing a hell of a lot of things right if you're double world champions and just to see the way they operated. I think that was a great morning spent. Obviously, us interacting with, as a coaching bomb year, but also the medical staff, the SNCs, the physios, interacting with physios.
Around that, must have been.
And how, I wish I knew more about rugby because, yeah, it must be lekker to coach rugby.
It's a hell of a squad as well compared to cricket, right? Jeez, yeah. It's a lot of squad, basically.
It is, yeah. And I look at it and I'm like, we're not only number one in the world. We're like number one and two in the world.
Yeah.
I look at that squad, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been great. And we stay in touch, you know. But it's not a case of him telling me, listen, I think you should do it like this. And he's like, fuck, who can cricket? Ek dink julle kan ons help. You know, because it's like an individual sport. You know, when the guy's standing with kicking, that becomes individual. The pressures that he's got to deal with, the hooker throwing the ball. Right, once the game is going, it's different. But just those little individual moments where the hooker, and it's the biggest throw, and Marks can't miss you now, or Bongi can't miss you now. Dealing with those sort of pressures, how do we, when the Oaks facing, and you know, little things that...
Breaking it down.
But it was 2.5 hours coming back to that evening at the hotel. 2.5 hours, like two bras sitting around a fire, and just like breaking bread and talking.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, talking ball.
That must have been unbelievable. Shookster, we are coming to the close of our chat. I know you're a busy man and I appreciate your time. You've probably got 14 other things to do.
It's family today. It's a family day today.
Family day. You're with family. We're all part of the family here. But we have a section here called The Roast. We're in Bootlegger in one of the stores here in Greenpoint. And from a coaching point of view, I'd like to ask you, has there ever been a player, you allow chirping in the change room, has there ever been a player who's chirped you that's gone, that's a really good chirp, like you really see the value in that chirp?
World Test Championship, yes. And Temba, after the one day's play, after the match, in fact, there are a few drinks in, and he says to me, in case you're thinking about leaving me out of the one day side,
And I'm like, why? Where would this? He says, you know, most you coaches, you never know.
I'm the only brother that did the six in this match.
Me.
And I had to like rack my brain, and it might not be a chirp, but yeah. And,
that's a great chirp, yeah.
And it's like, just in case you were thinking,
yeah,
I'm the only oak across both teams to hit the six in this match. I was like, okay. I think the biggest chirp is, I mean, and for some reason, I don't know where it started, where they like got the song now that they sing, you know, we make you look good. I think Scholesy might have started that shit. He always started, him and Bedders. The Siamese twins are like from Kreinberg. That's probably the, we make you look good, we make you look good, Shukri Conrad, we make you look good. But there's like so much banter. I can't think of anything like really. Coaches, we give each other a lot of cuck as well. I'll shame old Pitt when Noble, there was like over that New Year test matches, there were like quite a few Nobles bowled. And Pitt was starting to feel the pressure, you know. And he's like, and I'm like giving him like gears, and I'm like, fuck, are you going to do anything about this, you know? But now Ashley and him are watching the whole thing because they know I'm like really winding him up.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you going to do anything about this? I mean, fuck, we can't. And Lords and KG steps over the line, and there was like this one where,
yeah.
And he turns around and he like kicks the helmet. Helmets go flying. And concentrate. So Pitt gets like really wound up. And he lives every ball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Pitt, you need to like chill out there. And he's like, no, man. Even my mates are giving me shit. So.
Not his boss. It was more the mates.
The mates are not giving him shit. The Oaks is on his WhatsApp group here about the Nobles. But yeah, no, I'm sorry I didn't have anything more juicy. And
no.
It will probably come to me when I'm driving.
Back. Later, we can just add.
Yeah. Come to me when I'm driving back. No, sorry, I'm.
Shooks, the final section we have today, it's called the Declaration. That's six quickfire questions that we ask. And just shoot, just give whatever comes to mind. Who's one player, past or present, you'd pay good money to watch? I know you don't pay for tickets anymore, you know. But who's the one player you would pay to watch?
Maybe de Villiers.
Nice. Have you ever used ChatGPT to help solve a coaching conundrum?
No, but this is a funny one. So we've got to write reports now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, I'm not good at report writing. So Kriya says to me, we're sitting outside. Kriya says, coach, I'm sure if you go there to ChatGPT, whatever. So I'm typing in, there's Pete Boita, that name again. He sits there. He says, you know, there's another one that you can use. It's called A1. And I'm like, A1? You mean AI? Oh, yeah, that one is an AI. So, no, I haven't used the ChatGPT, but I thought I had to throw the A1.
That's a great
bit in there from Pete Porter, yeah.
That's a great one. One player you wish you'd had the chance to coach?
A.B. de Villiers.
Never got to...
No.
Wow.
I don't think I would have coached him, but I've just, like, been lucky to be in the same change room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a master's gig maybe in a couple of years' time after...
Oh, gosh. After too much pressure, they won that now, so yeah.
What's a great book you've read that you'd recommend to one of your players?
Yeah, Justin Langer's book many years ago. I hate saying this about the Aussie. The Power of Passion, I think it's called.
Mm. Craziest thing you've ever seen on or off the cricket field related to cricket, not related to cricket.
Craziest thing, yeah, it goes many years, and I never did understand what happened there. It was obviously something said on the field. And Langers was bowling at Shoal Willoughby.
That's a
long time ago. Langers was playing for the Lions, and then Pop was playing for Cobras. I was with the Cobras. And Langers was the bowler, and they were like having words, and Langers was the bowler, wanted to hit, but Shoal Willoughby, who had the helmet on.
was a police warden, wasn't he?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean they were good mates, but that was like the one thing that like always comes up when we talk crazy stuff that we've seen. But they obviously need some.
Okay, here's the final one. That's gonna be a tough one for you as the coach, okay. And you can give the I'm not gonna lead you here. If you had to choose a 2027 World Test Championship win or the ICC World Cup win in 2027 on home soil, what would it be?
I can't have both.
You can have both.
Obviously, first prize is both. But if I had to choose, 2027 World Cup, ICC World Cup, I think maybe because I've got 2025 WTC now back skyrocket already, but I think that's the biggest thing. That is as a pure cricketing person, WTC for me, biggest. Mm. But I think now that we've got the 2027 World Cup, has to be the biggest thing.
Absolutely.
And hopefully, we get to share that as well.
That would be unbelievable. The cricketing, the country would just be through the roof, eh?
And I know I'm carrying on here.
No, carry on.
Not that you ever, you think about it, because Owens like ask you, they're like, would you, I don't think I could coach any other country. Because I don't know, I don't think I'd ever be able to speak with as much passion and desire in another change room. Because it wouldn't matter that much. Probably do it, there's the professional side to it where you obviously
it's a job
and you
the job and
you do your best and whatever. But shit, man, I'd struggle to do anything else because it's like, as a South African, I know what it's like to be a South African and travel the world and near folk. I don't want to be anywhere else. I just want to be in South Africa. Cape Town in particular.
Yeah. Shooks, you've created this feel good factor in cricket. It does seem with everything going on in cricket that there's this kind of like momentum which is just like only at the start of that wave. So you're the right man for the job. The biggest man in cricket says that you don't need anybody else to say it. You're the right man for this current team. Our youngsters, the Brevies and the Pretorias and Quenas, are in great hands with Shukri Conrad at the helm. Good luck for your upcoming test series in Pakistan and 2026 World Cup. Enjoy the break while you say 20's on and in the summer holidays. I'm sure we'll see you at some of the games, but thank you for everything that you've done for South African cricket. I don't think that probably gets said enough. You've done the hard yards. You really come through and being the national coach, there's no better man that this country has to represent the country under. Come 2027, Shukri Conrad, I reckon walking down Cape Town CBD and not even on a bus, I reckon you're going to walk down the freedom of the road. That would be amazing. Thanks very much for your time. I know you've got a busy schedule and you've probably got your medal in your car at the moment because you need to go somewhere, government lunch or something like that. But
no such thing. Brookie, thanks for having me, my pal.
No problem.
How are you?
This is enough coffee to keep you awake for the next few days from our friends at Bootlegger. So please take
it. Bootlegger, thanks, man. I definitely wonder. I love this. Be perched nicely next to my Vietnamese coffee.
Oh, lovely. I definitely need to try some of that.
No, I'm a fan. Bootlegger is right up there. So thanks very much. Thanks for having me, Brookie.
Thanks, Shruti. Good to see you and enjoy Pakistan.
We will. We'll
try. Watch you on TV.
Thanks. Good man. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.